Yes, it's Gardening Talk back, and this week I'm joined by Scott Sharp. How are you?
I'm very, very well. What a spectacular weekend we just had.
We did. It was beautiful. Nice weekend for gardening.
Yep, didn't have the breeze. It was really, really lovely. Look, a couple of plants that are out in flower at the moment and looking absolutely amazing. The Tibetina, so we'll talk about those and all the different varieties you can plant in your garden. There's also Syzygium cascade, which is a great hedging plant, really, really popular in the past. Let's just talk about it again and get it more popular again, and preparing your soil for sweet peas. Sometimes there's a plant that you think, oh, it must be an Australian plant, but it's not. And Tibetina is one of those. It actually comes out of Mexico, South America. You'll see it out and about at the moment because they just have spectacular purple flowers. They really, really stand out as the garden starts to get a bit drab as we go into autumn. Tibetina just looks absolutely amazing at this time of year. Lots of different varieties of it. So, look, when it came over here to Australia, it started to get developed by plant growers, especially up around the Byron Bay area. Now, there was a chap up there who actually created the one that we, I guess, see most predominantly here in Newcastle now, Tibetina alstonville. It's the one that gets about 3 metres tall, a really great plant for the garden because it's not going to get too big. It's also very, very prunable, and it gives you that vibrant colour at this time of year. Look, also, there's much smaller ones as well. There's Tibetina jewels, which is a little teeny tiny one that only gets to about a metre tall or so and spreads out across the ground. It'll grow in pretty much anything. I've seen it grow in really heavy clay soils. It'll grow, you know, just in your general good soil as well. And again, a really prunable little plant to keep as a nice little sort of metre high around there. Look, there's also other different varieties. There's a Noeline, which sort of starts out as a whitey pink flower. So a slightly different colour to that. So look, lots and lots of really lovely varieties that you can get in Tibetinas. They're all out at your local garden centres at the moment. So jump out there, have a look, and look, you'll find one that will suit your garden. Jewels you could probably even put into a pot without any problem whatsoever.
So they're outdoor plants. Do they have to be in the sun or mostly?
Yes, yeah, really full sun plants. Look, in winter, I guess they'll probably, you know, with the frost, they don't like it too much, but not to the, you know, it's not that bad that you wouldn't put it in your garden just because of the colour you do get at this time of year.
Wonderful. Yeah. Okay. Well, we've got Catherine Maitland on the line. Hi, Kath.
Hello.
Thanks for holding. How can we help you?
Oh, look, I'm pretty new to gardening, but I've been, because I've just sort of set up a little backyard and I wasn't sure where everything was going to go. So I have a lot of plants in pots, but I'm finding I want to put them, like make a bed, but I still want to keep them in the pots. But I'm getting a lot of ants in the pots.
Oh, okay. So they're just sort of coming up into the pots, and you do have to be careful about that because I guess while ants... you know, especially they're not the worst thing in the world to have around the garden. And they're quite cute little things in a way as well. But what they will do in pots is they'll start to create their nests, and
which is what they're doing.
Yeah, and then when you water, you get that flow through of your moisture that goes straight out through the pots and through the soil, and so the plant's not getting moisture or nutrients. So. Look, unfortunately, in those circumstances, you do have to do something about it. And I always feel bad about getting rid of the ants. You really just need to go and grab, you know, from your local garden centre, some sort of ant dust or even a pyrethrum that you can mix up in the watering can and drench it down through the soil. And that will get rid of the ants for you. So, look,
and it won't damage the plant?
No, it won't damage the plant. Okay. But look, leaving the ants there will damage the plant, sadly. Look, you just have to give them the message, hey, don't set up your house here. We're not going to give you a lease on this particular pot. You're going to have to go rent somewhere else in the ground. Really important to do that. Otherwise, the plants will suffer.
And what about to avoid them getting in there in the first place?
Yeah, look, not much you can do about that, unfortunately. They're always going to find, you know, their little legs are going to find a way to get there, and they'll have a bit of a dig and whatever the ants do and create their ant nest in there. So, look, not much you can do except just keep on monitoring and make sure that there's no ant activity. You can also get, if you go to your local garden centre or even the hardware store, you can get those sort of ant dusts as well that, so you could sprinkle some of those around the pot just to try and keep them out, because chances are they'll go through that first. But Look, unfortunately, to get them out of the soil now, you are going to have to, you know, drench through there with some sort of insecticide.
Yeah, bugger. All right. okay. No worries. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Kath. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Bye. So with ants, how much damage do they do to plants?
Well, it's not that they're really there, you know, eating the plant or doing anything particularly bad. It is just that they create those, you know, channels that the moisture just goes straight through. And I think it's something else about them that they bring in sandy soil, and then that doesn't help the plant either. You know, when you see their mounds, it always seems to be like dusty and powdery, and that just, you know, it doesn't attract moisture in any way. It repels the moisture. So, yeah, important to get rid of them at that early stage. Otherwise, not that so much that they're eating the plants, although they can. You know, if you get scale on a plant, the scale exudes like a little, you know, honey sort of residue out of it, and the ants go, ooh, that's tasty, and they'll head up the stem. They bring up, you know, mold spores from the ground. So, you know, they can be damaging in that way, so best to get rid of them early on.
Okay. Yep. Well, there you go. I've just learned something new. And we've got Michael from Cessnock on the line. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks for holding. Now, you want to talk about mangosteen trees.
That's right. I've got several. They're a beautiful tree, and I've got fruit on them. Just wondering, do they ripen in this climate? Because they're quite a large fruit, like about the size of a cricket ball, and I'm just waiting for them to ripen. And I've got several coffee trees. They're all doing extremely well.
Yeah, and you're up at Cessnock, are you, Michael?
Yes.
I was wondering how you were going to go. I saw this flash up on the screen. I thought, oh, mangosteen, how are you going to be growing those?
Awesome.
But so the plant itself's doing okay, is it?
Oh, yeah, I've got them up. I've got to trim them because they grow to 60 foot high.
They're a real big plant. So, look, as you probably know, they are tropical to, you know, Southeast Asia, where generally it's humid and 30 degrees all year round. And look, that's probably why you're struggling to get them, fruiting and flowering, because the window.
Oh, no, they fruit and flower okay. That's fine. I've just got fruit on them. I'm just wondering, they're just green for a long time. I just wonder whether they will ripen.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a problem, because the window here is very short in Newcastle and the Hunter to get that, you know, that that ripening happening. I think that's where you're really going to struggle. I mean, and you said you've got coffee as well, and I've also noticed in. You know, the coffee will grow okay here, but you get that very small window. Same with ginger plants as well, for instance. Only get a window of, you know, like almost 3 or 4 weeks where things are going to work for you.
Yeah, I've got the ginger and turmeric. They're flying away, absolutely. I don't think it's the humidity in the Cessnock Hunter Valley area that's keeping them coming.
you've got a lovely tree. You just have to hang on tight and see what happens see if they ripen up before we get to the colder weather. You know, and I guess, you know, here in Hunter, we've probably got January, February, March, April, and then a little bit into May, but that's really going to be.
Yeah, about 10 years old now. They're not like young trees. They're growing. A beautiful tree, evergreen. And,
and how do they withstand it when we get the cold winds and even a bit of frost?
No leaf drop or anything. Oh. I've just had to take a fair bit of foliage out to get a bit of wind through it, so it doesn't get any diseases. But no, they thrive. Yep. They've had no trouble with the cold wind, winter or anything. Just wondered how the fruit.
I really, when I saw it, I thought you were going to be struggling to even get these to grow.
No, they roar away. They're really flying well.
And what about your coffee? How are you going with that? How's that winter for you?
They're about 5 years old, so I've got them up to about 3 foot high, about a metre and a half, And they're thriving away. I've got them in pots.
Yes.
So kept them under a cover of another tree.
Okay, good.
Big white mulberry, and I'll leave them under there, and they're growing fine.
Yeah, and coffee is actually a very, very attractive plant. It's this really lovely glossy green foliage on it. Even when it gets the berries on there, you know, you get some red out of those, and they look pretty good as well. I always thought everyone should have a coffee plant in their garden. It's just certainly not a bad plant at all.
They look beautiful, that's right.
Yeah.
All right.
Right, well, look, fingers crossed, and hopefully we just get some warm weather that gets the mangosteen ripened for you.
Terrific. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Cool, Mike. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. Next, we've got Lynn from Hawk's Nest on the line. Hi, Lynn. How can we help you?
Hi. How are you, Amanda?
Good. Thank you.
Scott, thank you. Look, I've got a very simple question. I'm about to plant some snow pea seeds, mm-hmm. and I want to know whether I should put cow manure or chook manure into the soil to plant them.
Yes, look, I think probably a little bit of chook manure isn't bad. You just want to use something that's low in nitrogen with peas. Look, any sort of pea, really, sweet pea, snow peas, your normal snap peas, because yep. they're legumes and they make up their own nitrogen and they have their own magical system that they use. So, yeah, look, I'd use a little bit of poultry manure. I'd mostly be, though, using blood and bone and just then generally low nitrogen liquid fertilisers.
Okay.
Yeah. So jump off to your local garden centre and just say, I want a low nitrogen liquid fertiliser. And someone there will look at the packaging for you and go, the NPK. You'll see that, the number next to the N is much lower. And you can grab a few different ones and compare.
What was that? N?
Yeah, the NPK. So N stands for the nitrogen. So always when you're looking at your different fertilisers, make sure you've got the lowest number there for your nitrogen.
Okay, got it. With you.
Yeah, okay. Blood and bone's a really good safe one to use as well.
Yeah, but it's a bit stinky though, isn't it?
No, I don't think, my nose doesn't pick it up. But that's it. I even if the milk's gone, I can't smell that either. I've got tasters that I employ to do those sort of things for me. Look, blood and bone's a really great safe fertiliser to use in pots as well. But make sure that you're using, you don't sort of put big lumps of it around. Make sure you do it like a nice, almost fine. I'm just waving my hand around here and Amanda's looking at me.
I can see that.
Yeah, very good. You just make sure it's almost like a little mist going down over there. Water that in. Then you can do some more. If you start putting lumps of blood and bone down, they get hard and crusty and they just don't work anymore. They don't, go down into the soil. So, yeah, just make sure that it's a nice fine mist of blood and bone that you're putting over.
All right, lovely.
Okay.
Thanks very much, Lynn.
Well, thank you so much for your help.
Okay, appreciate
it. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Right. We've got Doug from Nelson Bay on the line. Thanks for holding. Doug, how can we help you?
Oh, hi, Amanda. Hi, Scott. Thanks for taking my call. Look, I've got a problem with golden cane palm. I've got about three stands of golden cane palm in my backyard, well established, probably 30 years or more.
Yep.
We love them. They look great at night with floodlights on them. But my buffalo lawn only grows up to about 3 metres from the base of these golden cane palms, so there's bare earth there. It looks pretty ugly. I'd love to plant something there, but I think it's either the shade or also if I try to put a spade in it, it's like really thick root matting right to the surface, which I think's come from the golden cane palm. I'm not sure whether I should try and mattock and dig that out to plant some ground cover in there, or should I put some topsoil on it and try and plant some ground cover in that topsoil? What do you think?
Yeah, I reckon that palm roots are just about one of the worst things you can ever try and get rid of. I remember back in the day, the old coccus palms, we'd cut one out and I sort of, bravely said, yeah, we'll be able to dig this out. It's, only these sort of fibrous roots. And so, a couple of strong lads and, myself took to it with the mattock and, the spades. And, about 20 minutes later, it was just give up because you're trying to hit into it with the mattock and it just, hits it's like, iron and then it travels back up through your arms and, all your joints are shattered from it. So, look, good luck with that. The only way you really clear, sort of palm roots away is with a proper handy old, stump grinder sort of thing. Do you really want to do that? Because it's probably then going to damage your palms as well and make them a little bit unhappy. So that's probably not the best thing to do. It might be that you just want to put some topsoil there and see what happens.
I'll try the topsoil. Whilst I'm talking to you, I'm thinking, I've tried putting a mattock in it, it just sort of bounced back off the ground, nearly hit me in the head.
yeah, it's true.
It's pretty tough stuff.
It is.
I just put pots in there, maybe so half a dozen nice pots with plants in those might work.
Yeah, and have, something that spills down over the pot. So, and then it might even just trail along the ground for you a little bit. But, I think, getting the stump grinder into them, it just starts to do too much damage. Your palms are most probably going to suffer because they haven't got big, deep roots. But, they do spread out across the surface. And that's why they can hold themselves up, in such strong winds.
Well, I certainly won't be trying to. I don't want to risk damaging the golden cane palms because I've been married 56 years, and that would be the end of that marriage, I think.
Yeah.
If I damage the golden cane palm, so. Right, thanks very much for the tip.
Certain situations in my marriage as well, so yeah, I know your pain.
Cheers. Thanks very much.
Okay. Thanks, Doug.
Thanks a lot. Bye. Next, we've got Bronwyn from Minmai on the line. Hi, Bronwyn. You've got issues with figs.
I have.
Yeah. What's going on there, Bronwyn?
Scott, I've got a fig tree that's been in the ground about 6 years, and I prune it every year after it's, you know, fruited, and every year it's filled with figs, but they never ripen, and I know you can't pick them until they're ripe.
Yeah, I mean, that's true, because if you pick them, they'll sort of just stay hard and green. That's really unusual, and it's out in the full sun, your particular plant?
It is. Well, it's on the south side, but it's in sun.
Yeah.
Because it gets it from all directions.
Okay. Yeah, look, that's really unusual. I don't know that I can sort of pluck an answer out of the air for you about that. I mean, short of moving the plant where it's, you know, just in the blazing hot sun, because that's obviously where they live in the real world, out in the wild.
Yeah, it's just a mystery. They're green. I'm looking at it now, and they're all on there, and they're all green. And I fertilise and I water. I just don't understand it.
Yeah, so look, obviously you're doing all the right things there. Nothing different you can do. You're getting a great crop there, but, they're just not ripening for you. And look, if you do pick them, you know, my experience, if you pick them when they're green, they'll just almost stay like that and just...
That's right.
Yeah, just sort of go bad. Yeah, look, I'm sorry, I haven't got an answer there for you. If anyone anyone out there listening does have an answer, we'd love to hear it though, of course, yeah.
Yeah, or try Judy next time.
Yeah. the case of the unripened fig. It's a Sherlock Holmes mystery.
I know, like year after year, so it's a mystery.
Okay.
All right, thanks, Scott.
Thanks for the call, and sorry we couldn't help you there.
That's okay. Bye.
We've got Philip on the line from Sunshine. Hi, Philip.
Hi.
You want to talk about inferiums?
Yes. We have one in a pot which is doing exceedingly well. There's over two dozen blooms on it, flowers on it. But it looks like something's eating it, and also some of the leaves are turning brown on the ends.
Okay. When you say it looks like it's being eaten, Philip, is it being, you're seeing munching around the outsides of the leaves or, you know, holes in the middle of the leaves?
One of the leaves has got holes in the middle.
Okay.
But a couple of leaves there, ends have turned brown.
Yeah.
It's being watered frequently.
Okay. Look, anthuriums can be, you know, a little bit touchy about watering, especially, you know, if you've got them sitting in a saucer. But that doesn't sound like the problem with yours. You're describing a fairly healthy plant with lots of blooms on it. What I'd be doing, though, I'd just be heading off to your local garden centre or down to your back shed and see if you've got some pyrethrum spray. Now, the reason I like recommending pyrethrum spray is because it's a really sort of safe. It's not a harsh chemical in any way. It's a natural sort of spray that we have from pyrethrum daisies, but it will really knock most things on the head that are coming in and having a bit of a munch on your plant. So make sure when you do use that you also, you know, give a good spray up in underneath the leaves as well, in case there's anything lurking around up in under there. And that should keep things under control for you. As to the browning of the tips of the leaves, if the leaf has been damaged by an insect, then generally the tip is going to be the first, you know, part of the plant to sort of die off in sympathy, just simply because the nutrients aren't getting out to the tips.
Okay, and should we cut those leaves off?
I wouldn't do that at the moment. Look, there's no, unless you know, they're really, really ugly and they're just very unattractive to you. But they're still working. They're still feeding the plant. So at a time like this when the plant might be getting a little bit stressed, I'd be leaving those on there and just giving a pyrethrum spray to make sure that, there's nothing lurking around in there.
Okay. Do we need to saturate the foliage or just give it a spray?
Give it a spray and make sure that you're giving it a spray in underneath as well. And have you had a good look around to make sure there's no little baby snails or anything lurking there?
Okay, right, I will check that.
Yeah, and look, is it indoors or is it out in an outside area where the snails could be coming in and having a crack at it?
It's outside, but it's on an upper deck.
Okay.
It's sort of tucked in a corner away from the wind and it's just going crazy.
Yeah, okay. Look, that doesn't mean that snails might not be hiding away somewhere and, you know, then coming out at night. You think they're the slowest things in the world, but if you sit there and watch them for 5 minutes, they actually make pretty good pace across the ground. So I'd also just be having a general check around there, you know, under the deck, any little crevices that the snails might be hiding away in at night, just because they could come out and do some damage as well.
Okay, then. We'll do that. Thank you.
Okay, thanks so much for the call, Philip. Appreciate it.
Bye. Newcastle and the Hunters, 2NURFM 103.7. This is Gardening Talkback, and we have Karen from Weston on the line. Hi, Karen. How can we help you?
Hi. I have a hibiscus, and it flowers absolutely beautiful. And I've got these little black, scaly-looking things that look like they stuck onto the stems of the shrub.
Yeah, that doesn't sound real flash, Karen, but...
No, there's hundreds of them.
Yeah, and so it's...
Last year I got rid of them.
Yeah.
I went around and I just picked every single one off.
Wow, that's persistence.
Oh, yeah, I didn't like them. And because I don't like using chemicals.
Yeah.
And they had little tiny brown babies and I got all them as well. But now they're back.
Okay, now when you say that they're like, are they on the leaves... you know, are you seeing holes forming in the leaves?
There's no holes.
Okay.
The leaves. Yep. They're on the leaves underneath as well as the little stems,
yep.
All the stems.
Okay. So it sounds like you do have black scale on there. I thought, you know, you might have had hibiscus flower beetle and they will put holes in the leaves of the plant, but it sounds like you've got scale. So, look, it's fairly easy to keep under control. You do need to use some white oil, though. So down to your local garden centre, grab some white oil and mix that up in accordance with the instructions on the side of the packet for getting rid of scale.
Right.
And then spray all over the plant, really drench the plant so you can see that white oil actually dribbling, you know, down the stems of the plants.
Yep.
Turn your spray upside down. Make sure you're actually misting up in underneath as well. Now, you'll find that once that scale's dead... It'll sort of dry out and you'll be able to get your fingernail and just sort of, you know, touch it a little
bit. Off, yeah.
Yeah, and it'll just sort of flake off and that's when you know, ha-ha, it's dead now. So, look, I'd do that and then in about 2 weeks' time, I'd give it another crack and give it another spray as well just to make sure that any little baby ones that are there aren't going to reform. Look, and you said you did all the good stuff last year, but scale's a windborne insect. It just gets carried around by the wind.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah.
How did I get there?
Lands on your plant, puts its little clutches in, and then it forms that funny shell over there, which is really difficult for insecticide to get in. That's why we use white oil, because it actually sort of breaks down and chokes the scale, so the little insect in underneath there can't grow anymore. So, give it a really good spray and then again in 2 weeks' time and that should keep it under control for you.
Thanks for your call, Karen.
It only likes certain plants because it's not on my other shrubs.
Yeah, look, and that can be the case. It will pick out on, you know, certain plants. Hibiscus must just be lovely and tender and soft for it to suck away at.
Yeah. Thanks for your call, Karen. Appreciate it. Next, we've got Trevor from Gateshead. Hi, Trevor.
How can we help, Trevor?
I have problems with my apple cucumbers.
Yeah, what's happening with it?
It's getting like little brown things all over the leaf, and then where the actual next little bit of vine comes out to grab the wire, all on that part, it's getting like little black things all over it.
Okay, I'm wondering if you might have some scale in there like we were just talking to Karen about. But look, apple cucumbers can be particularly vulnerable, especially in humid conditions like we've got here in Newcastle and the Hunter at the moment. It can be very susceptible to powdery mildew. So look, I would think down to your local garden centre and get a spray for powdery mildew. I would try and get Mancozeb or a copper spray and you just mix that up and spray that all around the plant. Now, look, it might be, Trevor, that, you know, what you're describing there might be a little bit too far gone for this year, but I think if you are going to grow them again next year, you use those sprays as a preventative, pardon me, you know, starting at the end of January when we start to get the real humidity here in Newcastle. So you'd then do that, you know, probably once or, you know, a week or once a fortnight, going through February and March to try and keep that mildew under control.
Oh, right. It's just the mildew.
Yeah, and look, if it is scale, what you're best to do is grab a bit of the actual plant where you see it's affected into a container or a plastic bag down to your local garden centre. They've got people down there who are trained. They know what they're talking about. They'll be able to actually lay some eyes on it and say, yeah, look, that looks like mildew. We're going to treat it with a fungicide, or that is actually a scale insect and we're going to treat it with white oil. So, I'd just be doing that. It's going to be one of the either. If it is that mildew, you need to try and get it under control. You can even drench the soil around the plant as well because the mold spores will live down in there. And again, next year, once we get it into those humid months, that's when you start preventatively treating to keep it under control.
Okay.
Good on you, mate. Okay. Appreciate the call. Thanks, Trevor.
Thanks very much. What does mildew actually do?
Yeah, well, I guess it's just like, you know, the evil sort of, you know, furry mold that you get. It just starts to damage the plant. It stops the plant photosynthesizing. I think he was trying to describe that perhaps the stem where it's actually going into the fruit was withering away as well. So you can get like a blossom rot in cucumbers where the actual flower gets the mildew, and that's when it travels down and the stem goes bad and you don't get your fruit.
Right. Well, there you go. I'm learning. I'm constantly learning.
That's why we're here.
Thank you very much, Scott. We'll catch up with you next week or Judy next week?
I think Jude will be back next week.
Okay. This is Gardening Talk back to NURFM.